This is the Protestant Libertarian Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and part of the Christians for Liberty Network. I really hope that you guys enjoy today's show. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast. My guest today is Wendy Massey. Wendy is a registered nurse who specializes in emergency and trauma for nearly two decades. She is a holistic nutrition specialist who runs Massey Wellness, a company that specializes in holistic lifestyle transformation. She is also the author of the brand new book, The Ultimate Meal Prep Guide to Simplify Clean Eating. We are going to discuss her history as a nurse, her transition to holistic health, why health freedom is critical to human flourishing, the failures of the medical industry, and how our society handled COVID. Wendy, welcome to the Protestant Libertarian Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I'm really excited to have this conversation. I've been wanting someone to come on my show and talk about this that knows these issues better than me for a long time. But before we get into our conversation, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and the work that you do at Massey Wellness.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm a wife and a mom and been a nurse for two decades. I had a very shocking turn of events with my son's health about 10, 11 years ago now. He's now about to turn 30, but back when he was just out of high school, he became extremely ill and Western medicine was failing him. And, so I went down a path of holistic healing for him, which I'm sure you and I will go into more detail about. Went back to school to get my bachelor's in holistic health sciences. I was a little disillusioned by what Western medicine had taught me. And now I'm about a year and a half out from completing my doctorate in integrative medicine, completely focused on nutrition, and now have Massey Wellness that I've created, which I help people heal with nutrition from all kinds of diseases, losing weight, all of that kind of thing. So lots of healing going on in this world naturally.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you started your career as an emergency and trauma registered nurse, which I have some friends that have that do nursing and that kind of work. And that's a crazy job. So what made you want to become a nurse and what did you do throughout your career?
Sure. So I started wanting to be a nurse from a very young age. At 19, I became a CNA and, just working in the nursing homes and taking care of the elderly. And I loved it. But I wanted more. And so I went back to, full on nursing school, got my RN degree right about when I was 30. I had started my family young. So I waited till they were a little bit older, went back to school, and always was interested in emergency and trauma. Went right into there probably about 6 months after graduation and did all ER and trauma. I became a certified ER or certified emergency nurse and certified pediatric emergency nurse. At the time when I got those certifications, there were only about 1,500 nurses in the country that had both certifications. So I was real proud of that. It was calling. I felt strongly about being able to help people, and that's where I was.
Yeah. So you have a really crazy backstory that you alluded to in the introduction here. You experienced a major turning point in your life when your son became sick. And it was through that process that you began to change your perspective on health, wellness, and the medical industry. Talk to us about what happened to your son and how that experience changed your perspective on all of these issues.
Absolutely. So when he was went from my super, super healthy kid, graduated high school, and then became a type 1 diabetic. That was already shocking in and of itself because we don't have a history of diabetes in our family, certainly not type 1, juvenile diabetes. We got a handle on managing his diabetes. About 9 months later, he became extremely ill with a GI disorder that we couldn't put our finger on. No doctors seemed to be able to figure it out. I took him to doctors all over. And of course, being a nurse, I knew some amazing ones, I felt. So I'm taking him to all the best ones I know. They just keep throwing pills at him, putting him in through procedures. He's 18, 19 years old and, they're doing every procedure they can imagine. They've got him on 5 different medications in addition to his insulin. And he just kept getting worse. And he got down to, nothing. Somewhere he and I debate on whether it was 128 or 118 pounds. I swear I remember 118, but still way too for somebody who's 6 feet tall. And that's what he had gotten down to. And he couldn't function, you know, here. And my last straw was the last doctor wanted to put him on antidepressants. And I'm like, what? My cat's not work. Maybe he is now because he's so stinking sick, but it wasn't because of depression that he was having these GI problems. So it dawned on me that not one doctor asked me what he was eating. In 9 months' time, not one asked me what he was eating. I'm going to GI specialists. To me, that should just be, you know, obvious. And
yeah,
at the time, you know, I'm the all in Western medicine nurse, and so I'm hanging on every word they're saying until all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, something's not adding up. And I started doing my own research, and I'm thinking, well, I got a whopping 3 weeks of education in all of my nursing school on nutrition, and they taught us about the food pyramid. You know, what did doctors learn? So I started looking into it, and the medical schools got less than the nurses do. So I started researching myself, and I did a full elimination diet with him. And what had happened to him over 9 months, we completely in 5 weeks. We determined what all of his inflammatory triggers were, what was sending his GI system into a, you know, complete turmoil. And he was running again in 5 weeks' time. And we got him off all of his medicines, except for his insulin. So it was pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's incredible. And now you run a company called Massey Wellness, where you specialize in holistic health and nutrition. But a lot of people don't know what that term means. And again, it's like you said before, I mean, even our doctors and nurses are trained not to think about nutrition, but to only think about medicine and those kinds of interventions. So when you talk about holistic health and nutrition, what do you mean by that phrase?
So I guess to first answer that question, I'll just tell you, in holistic training, we learn that everything should be thought of as a top-down approach. So with spiritual being at the top, you know, if your relationship with God isn't right, or whoever it is that you see as your deity, you know, of course, for us, it's our God, it's Christ. But, you know, if that is not aligned, nothing else will be. So then you go back, you go down the list, mental health. If that's not aligned, your physical and your emotional isn't going to be. Then you go down a little further, your emotional. If that's not, then your physical health isn't. Western medicine doctors go straight for the physical. They do a bottom up approach. And so with holistic healing, though my specialty is the nutrition piece of it, I'm always talking to people about, you know, hey, if you're not sleeping, what are you doing for meditation? Are you praying? Are you doing all this stuff? So we look at all the different pieces of what can be affecting their physical health. But then my specialty is to come in and go with clean, natural nutrition, foods that God intended to have us consume when we were created.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and start with nutrition, because this is something that I think is just so fundamentally misunderstood. And again, I grew up like most kids eating what normal kids in America eat, which is, I now know, not very good for anybody. A lot of doctors don't even consider nutrition, and they didn't consider it for your son. And I know that I've had health problems in the past, and you go to the doctor and it just seems like they immediately want to push some pill on you, and they don't even ask questions about what you're eating on a regular basis or how much you're sleeping. You know, all of the things that you were alluding to in the answer to that last question. Why does there seem to be such an aversion to nutrition in the American medical community? And then what difference does a healthy diet make for an average person's life?
Well, as far as why the doctors don't, they aren't taught it. They are taught pills and procedures. And this was, I think, the biggest turning point for me, was because when I started researching who funds these medical schools, who's funding all of the research that goes on at these medical schools. I mean, why does Coca-Cola have an interest in what medical schools are teaching? Why does, you know, the Kellogg's Corporation care what the medical schools are teaching? There's a lot of dollars being thrown into the medical schools that are, you know, from these processed food companies. Of course, they don't want them to teach good health that tells people to avoid processed foods, you know? And then, of course, the pharmaceutical companies are who are funding all the research or who are funding these medical schools. That's what they want you to learn, is to, you know, answer, the answer to everything is pills and procedures, because that's what the doctors are taught. I always tell people, if you find a doctor who actually cares about your nutrition, he cares enough, he or she cares enough and has done that research on their own. They are not, or they've gone to a more holistic directed school, but they're very few and far between in this country. And you asked me a second part of that question, and I can't remember what you asked.
Oh, well, I want to come back to that. But before we do that, though, like with the training, so you said that you only had like 3 weeks of nutrition when you were training to become a nurse. Because like when I go to the doctor's office, like a lot of the doctors there are not very healthy themselves. And so it seems to me like they would just like intuitively understand that diet has to have something to do with that. But is it just the fact, like you said before, that the scientific paradigm for medicine in America is pharmaceutical and that's it? And there are just all these, is that the reason why that they can't even see what seems to people like you and me to be so obvious?
Yes. And again, it wasn't obvious to me at first because I was going by my training. You would think it was. I mean, it's like, I always believed I was health conscious, but my definition of health conscious very much changed because, again, what I was taught was the food pyramid, which is horrible. You know, it's, yeah, you know, all of the government standards for what good, you know, healthy eating is are horribly flawed. And that's what we were taught, you know, and that's what all the schools were taught. So, I think that is the biggest shift. I always say I went from being furious at doctors to realizing it's not their fault. They really don't know. I blame the medical schools. I blame it's the path, follow the money, you know, follow where the money trail is on who's funding the doctor's education. And it's powerful. It's really powerful.
Yeah. I know before COVID, a lot of the people that I know that are like more conservative or libertarian like us, but I live in Kentucky, and Kentucky's a very unhealthy state. So when I told people like that I had these kind of dietary restrictions and stuff, everyone thought that I was a hippie and all of that kind of. But now after COVID, I think people are a little bit more open to that. So I know a lot of my audience members might be coming to the idea of holistic health for the first time, or they might be more open to it now than ever before. What is the importance of nutrition for a healthy overall lifestyle?
It's huge. It's everything, in my opinion. One of the things that I teach is that your immune system, 95% of it is in your gut. So if you're treating your gut poorly, your immune system is not going to serve you in the way that it was created to. I mean, there are over 70,000 chemicals that have been created in the last hundred years, 70,000 chemicals in the last 100 years. You know, a lot of them are environmental, a lot of them are in our water, a lot of them are in personal care products, but the big, large majority of them are in our foods. And, you know, people don't realize that if you're constantly putting all of these foreign objects into your body that man-made, that we weren't created to process, our bodies don't know what to do with it. Our filters, our liver is our body's filter, and it's working overtime, trying to constantly, you know, balance all of the garbage we're putting into it. And you know, if you're causing your body to have to do all this work, the last thing it's thinking of is, oh, let me have this healthy immune system. I mean, you're destroying it. So, you know, really, if you learn to eat toxin-free as much as possible, obviously it's very hard to do these days, but as much as possible, certainly, you know, if you're reading labels and you see stuff on labels that aren't natural, put it back on the shelf, you know, but if you're eating toxin-free as much as possible, you give your body a lot less work to do so you can build your immune system.
Yeah. Like you said before, almost all of the food that we consume in America is processed and produced with these chemicals. So you've kind of talked about the impact that they have on our health. Why is our food produced that way in the United States?
It's, again, follow the money. I mean, there's so much money in these processed food companies in quote unquote big food. They can make it cheaper. They can make the food cheaper. They can make more money. And they also have learned to be able to use products and ingredients that keep us addicted, you know, and that is very much, in my opinion, maliciously done. They bring in flavor scientists that will use chemicals that are designed to keep you addicted to their products. You know, there's maltodextrin, one example, is designed as a zero calorie form of a sweetener. It does other things too, but that's one of the things that one of its purposes is, you know, you think you're getting this great product that has no added calories, but it also has a property in it that keeps you addicted, keeps you coming back for more. And that's done by design. I mean, many of these ingredients aren't even allowed in other countries.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I know, like my wife and I have talked about a lot, because we're for the most part gluten-free and we don't eat a lot of dairy and things like that. But it seems like over in Europe, it doesn't seem like people have as much of an aversion to dairy and gluten over there. Does a lot of that just have to do with the way that it's processed in the United States?
That and how our cows are raised. I mean, we mass produce these cattle and have tons of antibiotics and hormones and so many different things that go into, you know, how these cows are raised, for example, that it translates through the dairy. And it's just terrible for our systems. As a matter of fact, there's some research out there, and I got into this a lot when my son became a type 1 diabetic, where they're saying that our dairy is one of the major causes of juvenile diabetes. And it just keeps getting ignored. The people that have brought it to, you know, to the government and to, you know, different organizations keep shutting that down. They don't even want to talk about it. But there's tons of research out there that's proven that that can be one of the factors that's causing it. But you're exactly right. I have clients that I've worked with that I do trigger testing with them to figure out what their inflammatory triggers are. And, you know, I'll have people that are severely restricted from dairy here, but they'll go over to Italy and they're like, oh my gosh, I had their cheese and I had no problem, you know, and it's very different.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, I think one of the reasons why people that are in libertarian circles like us have always been skeptical of holistic health has been the fact that it seems like progressives who also are aware that they're legitimately aware that this is a problem. Their solution is always, we need more regulation. We need more control over these companies. And so obviously from someone that comes from our perspective, we're like, well, you know, we don't really want the government getting involved in that part of our lives. And in reality, the more you dig into this, organizations like the FDA, the CDC, and of course, you know, the NIAID, everyone's favorite during the COVID years, those organizations seem to always be lurking in the background of these health processes in the United States. So talk to us about the role that these regulatory agencies play in controlling the kinds of foods that go into our body and the kinds of medicines that our doctors recommend when we go to the doctor and say that we're sick.
The best way that I can say, again, I hate to keep sounding like a parrot, but follow the money. I mean, that's the reality. It's no, we don't want a ton of restrictions, but we want truth, you know, and when you go to these companies or when you go to these organizations and you see what they're recommending, there always seems to be, you know, oh yeah, all these foods are safe, but oh, here's a pill that'll fix whatever ails you because you've eaten too much of this food. I mean, instead of really getting down to the nuts and bolts of what is causing all of the illness. So I think that's the biggest thing where my skepticism has come in is that it seems like every time there's a new medication, well, it's because we're fixing something that, you know, this obesity crisis has caused. But we're not talking about what to really do to fix the obesity crisis. You know, like they just recently, with the children, American Academy of Pediatrics just changed the BMI charts for kids, you know, instead of addressing that they need to have a healthier lifestyle and why kids are so much bigger and so much more unhealthy than they were 20 years ago, you know, instead of addressing the root cause, let's just move the bar. Let's not worry about these kids that are, you know, having all these problems unless they're in the top 5%. And we're talking these top 5% are like 45, 50 BMIs. And these are the kids that they're focused on. And then the right on top of that, the American Academy of Pediatrics says, oh, guess what? Now for all kids over age 12, we're going to allow bariatric surgery, and we're going to allow diet pills. I mean, it's like, come on, let's move the bar and then go into all that. So,
yeah, I mean, and I really have, I think, been aware for the last couple of years that it's the FDA is really the worst of all of these organizations. And I don't think that people understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the FDA, they really do control absolutely everything that makes it to the shelves in the grocery store.
They do. And the way they do it, though, is really sinister, in my opinion. They don't even do their own testing. They will put a stamp on something that, I'll just use a random company, say Hershey's has something that they want to, a new product that they want to use with new ingredients. They hire their own scientists to then say, this is safe for human consumption. And the FDA says, oh, great. Research study with all these people that you paid to say that it that it was safe for human consumption, and they put their stamp of approval on it. So a lot of people assume when the FDA approves something that the FDA has actually gone and done this research and has done all of this work, when really what it is they're just approving the work that the companies are doing that are approving their own foods. So it's really crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, and another thing that people don't know too, I talked about it. I released a solo episode on COVID a couple of weeks back, and the FDA's funding structure is really strange because a lot of the fees that are paid, or I guess a lot of the money that is a part of the FDA's budget, isn't allocated by Congress. It's paid by industry users. So you have like agricultural interest and pharmaceutical interests that are literally paying the FDA to regulate them, which is obviously going to cause all of these problems.
Right. 100%. Yeah.
And the FDA, too, before we move on, they're responsible for the food pyramid and all of those dietary guidelines as well.
Yes, they're responsible for deciding which are the ones that the schools teach and everything like that. And as a matter of fact, they're going through a new reorganization that the current administration is really wanting to encourage. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. I know it. It's escaped me. But it's a new basically where you can plug in a food and it'll tell you where it falls on the list of health. And, you know, I heard a lot of buzz about this and I started researching, and it's a guy, it's a professor that created this, but the way that they did it, because they're putting still so much weight on, you know, the grains that they put in cereals and all this kind of stuff, it literally noted Lucky Charm cereal as being more healthy than eggs. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, it's crazy. And it hasn't been approved yet, but there's big talk that this administration is going to push that through.
Yeah. And oh man, every single kid in America is going to love that.
Yes, 100%.
Could you maybe explain to my audience what the FDA's recommended dietary suggestions get wrong? So what would be a better alternative to what they're suggesting?
Honestly, my biggest complaint with all of it is that they don't discourage processed foods. That is the biggest problem in our country, is that processed foods are just looked at as normal foods, even all the way down to the nutrition industries, because they will put together these processed frozen meals, and I mean, Weight Watchers, Atkins, all these companies that you think that are supposed to be all about health, they are, you know, pushing their toxin-filled foods. And so I really do feel like that the biggest problem is that they don't just encourage whole foods. And, until I see a food pyramid or something like that, where it's like, okay, if there's something that you don't understand on a label when you read it, put it back on the shelf, until they start, discouraging processed foods, it's not going to get any better.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really unfortunate because it does have such a deleterious effect on our ability. It's like you said before, our entire, our mind is our mind is mostly controlled by our gut and the way that we feel and the foods that we eat. That controls a lot of the way that we see the world around us. This is really sad that those are our options. And, you know, we as a society have counted on these organizations to protect us and they have failed to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to say this before we move on. You know, I'm a public school teacher and I teach seventh graders, so 12 and 13 year olds. And I go into the cafeteria and they make a big deal every year about the fact that we're giving these kids these nutritious school lunches, but then they all get ice cream and they're all drinking like chocolate milk and it's just processed sugar and red dyes and all kinds of things. And then like we wonder why they act so poorly in the afternoon. It's because we pump them full of all this garbage and not let them move around at all during the day. It's so obvious to me that like this is the problem. But I guess it's like you said before, we live in a society where people inherently trust the FDA. They think that the FDA think the FDA has our interest in mind and not the interest of these massive corporations. And so we just believe whatever they tell us. Speaking of believing whatever they tell us, my own journey to holistic health started before COVID. And so as soon as they started rolling out all of their non-pharmaceutical interventions, I was immediately skeptical because I was like, you know what? Most Americans are overweight or they're dehydrated or they're not getting enough nutrition. People need to do that instead of like locking themselves in their home and being afraid of this, because it was very obvious from early on in the pandemic that it seemed to affect people that were dramatically overweight and that were very old and infirm. Like if you had a pre-existing condition, you were the one that was at risk. And so if you exercised and took care of yourself, you didn't really have that much to worry about. But that was not the narrative at all during the pandemic. So this is going to be a huge question here, but what did the medical industry and the public health establishment get wrong during the pandemic?
Definitely, just like you said, not focusing on nutrition. I actually, very early on, because at the time I was still working in the ER, I no longer am, but during COVID, I was still working in the ER. And one of the early, maybe it wasn't well received as a joke, but one of the things that I posted out there on social media, I was like, I would love to know how many people are discussing the COVID pandemic over their Big Macs at McDonald's. You know, it's like, nobody was talking about how, you know, what we were eating was having the biggest effect on all of our immune systems. And, you know, it was just put these masks on, you know, you weren't allowed to be around people anymore, which also builds our immune system. You know, all of these things that we were told to do that depletes our immune system, and it made no sense. I mean, I have a 7-year-old stepson, my bonus son, I call him. And he's now, here he is, we are, what, a couple years past this? And he is now in and out of the doctor. I mean, like, he has a fever or something, it seems almost every month now, because it's like he's had to go back to rebuilding his immune system all over again. And it's just incredible how many kids are going through this because of all that. And I think we did a lot wrong during that period.
Yeah, I remember like in the very first, so again, I live in Kentucky and Andy Beshear is our governor. He was horrible on COVID, one of the worst in the entire country, just terrible all along. But in the very beginning, I remember him saying, this was right when they announced the shutdowns, you know, that second week of March in 2020, he said, hey, people need to get outside. You need to get fresh air, go for a walk, take care of yourself. I remember thinking, you know, that's really, really good advice. But then 2 weeks later, we were all supposed to be locked in our house. And if you lived in like a city or something like that, you weren't even allowed to like leave and go hang outside in a park. So it was that kind of stuff that you were saying, that those were the kinds of things that really actually put people at a massive disadvantage during the pandemic.
That and also, you know, the fear that I witnessed that caused more problems. I mean, I, you know, being an ER nurse, it to me, the most devastating thing that I saw was how many people were afraid to come get help when they truly needed help. And we had people that were coming in cardiac arrest that had, you know, chest pain for 5 days that we probably could have saved. You know, we had little old ladies that were coming into the ER with stroke symptoms that they'd had for days. And, you know, if any of you all have seen the billboards, you know, time is brain. If they get in there in the first 4 hours, we can do tremendous work and reverse their symptoms. If they wait 4 days, you know, they were more afraid of catching COVID than they were of having no use of the left side of their body and never walk. on. I mean, and it was just the fear instilled really created a whole nother set of problems.
Yeah. I mean, you and I are both libertarians, and so we know how these power structures of government work. Do you think that that was intentional?
It's so hard to say. I don't think that everybody involved was malicious. I do think that there was a whole lot of, you know, getting people to follow this weird narrative that didn't make sense and using fear to do it. I've been saying that even with the flu vaccines. Like, just everything to me, again, I'm a parrot, follow the money. You know, it never made sense to me. One of the reasons why I've lived in Maryland since 2016, yeah. And my first 2 years I worked in a hospital system up here. And as soon as I realized that I couldn't work in a Maryland hospital and refused the flu shot, I started commuting back to Northern Virginia, which is where I've worked most of my career, was in Virginia, where they at least gave you the option, because I would see, you know, this whole, well, we've got to save the world and get these flu shots that only had some years 16% effectiveness. And so I just really felt like we were going down that same path where we don't know what this is. We don't know. All we can tell people really is that they need to improve their immune systems. But instead, it was the opposite. It just wasn't making sense, you know?
Yeah. And do you think that we would have saved thousands of lives had we just said, hey, you need to exercise and you need to drink water and you need to eat food? Would that have been the thing that really could have ended this earlier?
I think so. I think so. And I mean, just like I shared with a lot of people during all of this that I witnessed, you know, I was an ER nurse through the swine flu, you know, through, you know, major flu years, you know, through a lot of other high viral seasons. And it sucks, but there are people that die every viral season. It's horrible. And I'm not trying to minimize any of that happened during COVID. It was a horrible viral season, but I witnessed that over and over again, you know, with other viral seasons. And it was just a totally different twist on it. But with all of the others, we didn't, you know, isolate, we didn't do all of those things. And I feel like we got through them a whole lot easier. I mean, ER nurses are famous for never getting sick because we have little microdoses of every virus that comes through. And, you know, but every once in a while, like when the swine flu came through, we all got sick because it was something weird and different. But then we, you know, built our immunity. Nobody was making us mask up and do all that stuff. We stayed home for a few days while we had a fever and we'd come back. And then we, you know, we were fine to fight on. Same thing with any other viral season. And I mean, when COVID first came through, before it was a household name, we all knew something weird was coming through, because that December and January, every one of us in the ER got sick.
Yes.
You know, we all got sick. And that, again, wasn't normal for ER staff. So we go home, we're all, you know, have fevers for 2 days. We come back to work ready to fight. None of the 14 days of, you know, of isolation and all that kind of stuff. And so it's really hard to say, but I definitely think a lot was done wrong to harm our immune systems.
Yeah. And like you said before, we've not been primed as a society. Even our doctors and nurses have not been primed to think about health in terms of nutrition and exercise. It's all the pharmacological paradigm. You're going to take this medicine and that's the silver bullet that's going to make you feel better. We got to talk about the vaccines with that too. So I remember like a year ago, I work in a school district that they would, if you got COVID, they would pay for your vacation time or your sick time if you got the vaccine. But if you didn't, they refused to pay for your sick time. So I got COVID and I was out for just a couple of days. And my case was very mild. I think a lot of it had to do with my diet and lifestyle choices. You know, I was out for a couple of days. But at that point, we were told that it was a pandemic of the unvaccinated, and that the unvaccinated were the only ones that were spreading the disease. And that if you took the vaccine, that you weren't going to get it, you weren't going to transmit it. And millions of people were either encouraged through that propaganda or strong-armed by their employer or by government officials into going out and getting the vaccine. Why that narrative? Like, what made that, like, what drove our public health community and our pharmaceutical industry to push that narrative on American citizens?
That's a great question. I mean, again, hate to say it again, follow the money. I'm going to drive you crazy for that answer, but I mean, it's so accurate. I personally scratched my head over all of this because logically thinking, everything changed with this versus any other viruses. And sure, there's evolutions with different viruses, things that you might have to do differently. But the one thing that I kept hearing in my own head was, okay, all these years we've been encouraging, you know, our grandparents to get vaccinated, or, you know, somebody who's of poor health, who's elderly, to get vaccinated against pneumonia, you know, to protect themselves. We don't vaccinate the whole family against pneumonia to protect grandma. You know, grandma was the one getting the vaccine every 5 years or 3 years or whatever the pneumonia vaccine is now, to protect herself. All of a sudden, everything shifts and we're all supposed to get vaccinated to protect the rest of the world. And that has never been the case. When I took my kids when they were little, who are now, you know, 29 and 31, I took them to get their DPT and their polio and their MMRs, which was all there was back then. I mean, now it's crazy how many they have, but I took them to get those to protect them, you know, and it doesn't make sense how all of a sudden this shifted. And the other big thing that I noticed, we had organizations that came in. JCO is a big hospital organization, or you know, hospital regulatory commission that comes in and makes sure that you're doing everything right. When before all of this came to be, before the COVID years, you would walk in a hospital, and when, you know, if JCO was watching you and you put a big toe out in the hallway and still had your mask on and your gloves and your gown and your bonnet, you would have gotten cited for spreading the flu or tuberculosis or whatever was going on in that room that you walked out of the room. Well, all of a sudden, this is the worst disease we've seen in our lifetime. And we're being told we have to wear the same gown all week. We're being told we have to wear, you know, we basically changed nothing but our gloves. We're wearing the same, you know, shoe boots. We're wearing the same bonnets. We're wearing the same masks. As a matter of fact, we would have people walking around the hospital checking the trash cans to see if we were throwing masks away. I mean, it was insane. And how, if this was so, you know, such a problem, such a deadly thing, and yet we were having to wear this stuff still on our bodies all over the hospital. It just didn't make sense.
Yeah. And it seems like in hindsight, they were building up to unrolling the vaccines. Like, I really do feel like, you know, from my vantage point, I want to get your perspective on this. Throughout 2020, it seemed like they continued what we all now know to be pandemic theater, because none of those non-pharmaceutical interventions were actually effective based on research that has come out over the last couple of months. But it all seems like they were building up to that. What kind of control do companies like Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson and Moderna have over our medical industry? And obviously they're in bed with the FDA, right?
Mm-hmm. They are. They're funding the research. They're funding these companies. They're funding the medical schools. They're basically running the show.
Yeah. And do you think it was just that pressure on doctors and public health officials to push the vaccine narrative that led to all of the other decisions that were made during COVID?
Absolutely. I mean, I know some amazing, very intelligent doctors that shocked me, that were all about, you know, doing exactly what they were told. But one thing that I try to explain to people, that it wasn't all, you know, a lot of other libertarian-minded people, you know, that would be upset with the doctors. when you are in a world, again, I was already beyond the trusting everything that I was hearing from Western medicine when I'm going through this. But when you're in the Western medicine world and something crazy is going on, and what do? You go to the CDC website and say, how do I handle this? So you're doing exactly what you're being told to do. I mean, I worked in one of the closest hospitals to Dulles International Airport. And you can imagine the crazy things that would happen in our ER if somebody came off a plane and is having some weird symptoms that we've never seen. That's the first thing we do. Go to the CDC website. Oh my goodness. What in the world do we do with this? You know, this person just came from Ethiopia. What kind of things are going on there that we don't deal with here in America? You know, so I don't necessarily fault the doctors because they were doing what they knew to do from the sources that they were being given. And it, I'll be the first to admit, as skeptical as I became, and it didn't take me long. It was the day that I walked into a nursing meeting one morning and they said, hey, if we run out of masks, it's okay to wear a bandana. And I'm going, that is not at all going to help if what you all are saying is accurate, you know, and that, and even my nursing director was like, you know, you could tell by the way he said it, that he was just kind of like, well, I'm just repeating what the CDC is telling us, you know, I'm supposed to give you this information. But the first couple of weeks, because I didn't know what we were dealing with, I was also on high alert. And what does the CDC say we need to do? And all this kind of stuff, because it's all we had. But
right,
once you start using your own brain and seeing what you're seeing, and it makes you think otherwise.
Right. Well, you kind of mentioned it before with reference to the flu vaccine. You know, it has a very low efficacy rate, and the flu vaccine is full of lots of toxic chemicals. I mean, that's just the reality of the flu vaccine. And one of the really like eye-opening things to me when they started rolling out the vaccines is they said that it was impossible for these mRNA vaccines to give anyone side effects. Like, not a single person that would ever take an mRNA vaccine could ever possibly get a side effect. When, like, I have kids in my classroom at school that like go to the hospital to eat a peanut, you know, like there's no way that there is going to be a medicine that will not get that no one will have an adverse effect to. So what are some of the legitimate side effects that you've seen from the COVID vaccine being in your profession?
That's a great question. I have actually helped a lot of my clients with a lot of inflammatory responses post-vax, as well as post-COVID. But post-vax, I've had people that have come to me that never had GI problems in their life that all of a sudden can't seem to tolerate, you know, all these foods. I have people that all of a sudden have chronic migraines. I have people that all of a sudden have chronic joint pain, you know, have developed heart conditions that they never had before. I know, one person that I worked with was an avid runner that 2 weeks after the vaccine, all of a sudden she developed pericarditis and could no longer run anymore. And the thing that started really upsetting me is that it was always dismissed. It's like, oh, it's just coincidental. It doesn't have anything to do with the vaccine. But when I have been able to help people get the inflammatory foods out of their body and help them heal with nutrition, we've been able to make huge strides with that, with a lot of the inflammatory processes, but it definitely did something to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's incredible that you're able to do that, though. But it goes to show you just how powerful health can be, that if you take care of yourself and you exercise and you eat the right foods, your body can naturally heal itself without all of these medications.
Absolutely.
The COVID narrative has absolutely been unraveling over the last couple of weeks, which has been very satisfying for, I'm sure, you to see, as well as it has been for me. Everything from the lab leak to even progressives starting to acknowledge that there are some very severe side effects to the vaccines. I mean, all of the things that we were told were gospel truth in 2021 and early 2022 have just been proven absolutely untrue, masking all of it. Do you think that based on this, there's going to be any reforms at all in the medical or the pharmaceutical industries and with the public health establishment? Like, do you think there'll be a point where they will become self-reflective and realize, like, you know, we screwed up, or are they just going to go back to business as usual and try to push this under the rug?
I think there's going to be a lot of sweeping under the rug, honestly. I what I'm hoping and praying is that we wake up, that people realize that they need to be their own advocates. I've gotten to a place of complete distrust over anything put out, which is sad because, you know, I believe in integrative medicine. I do believe that there's a, you know, my husband, when he had cancer, we did a whole lot of holistic and nutritional treatments, which I made sure that we only had doctors on our team that were, you know, big believers in how much that helps. But I also was all on board with them doing certain procedures that they had to make sure that we got rid of the cancer. So, you know, I'm not averse to all medical help. But what I'm really hoping this will do is wake people up that they have to be their own advocates and recognize that there are people like me, you, a lot of people out there that have big voices that are willing to help and are willing to help make sense of what you can trust and what you can't trust. One of the first things I do with my clients is teach them to get angry about what they see on the grocery store shelves. You know, a lot of people are blown away, and it's what I call their big awakening, because when you're you know, walking along in the grocery store and you just assume that everything that is allowed to be on our shelves must be safe. And then when I start teaching people what all these different ingredients do to their bodies, how it affects their immune system, how it causes inflammatory reactions, why we can't trust gluten in this country, you know, all these different things, it really helps open people's eyes to a lot of that out there. So I know that's a long way of answering your question, but truly it's not going to come from the government agencies, in my opinion. I really do think that it's going to have to come from us now having our eyes open and being our own advocates.
Yeah, I completely agree. And again, based on everything you've said today, it seems like the government is the problem in this scenario instead of the solution. We've talked a lot about nutrition and we've talked a lot about medication and the COVID response and everything. But the other really important component of a holistic, healthy lifestyle is exercise. Why is exercise so important to that healthy lifestyle? And what kind of physical activities do you recommend to our listeners today?
I work with people of all ages, from little kids all the way up to people in their 70s or my oldest clients currently. So I always encourage them to move more than before. That's like my big buzz phrase, is that I always tell them, you know, what one thing I don't want people doing is to say, okay, well, if I don't have time to spend 5 days a week in the gym and lift all this weight and do all this stuff, then I guess I might as well just do nothing. And so I always encourage, if you're a couch potato, I don't care if it's 10 minutes a day, 3 days a week, and you walk around your house, do something. But what a lot of people don't realize is that our immune systems, our livers filtering, our circulatory systems, everything relies on movement. We were designed to be mobile creatures. I mean, you know, you look at all the things that were built pre-industrial revolution, and these were done by very capable human hands. And it's mind-blowing when you think about how much physical activity our bodies were created to perform. So yeah, movement is huge, but I also don't ever like to overwhelm people and tell my 70-year-old client that, okay, here's my goal for you. I need you in the gym all these days and I need you doing all this. So it's just more, I try and take where they are and increase it. And I have people that come to me that are lifting 3 and 4 times their body weight. And I'm like, okay, let's see what's next level. You know, what's our next goal? So, you know, it's a matter of always improving.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And again, as libertarians, and I think as Christians too, like, you know, we believe that, you know, our bodies have value and that we're created in the image and likeness of God. And then we also believe that, like, people should be free. A really important component of that freedom and that a really important component of having this body that God has given us is, like, taking care of our health. For listeners who want to start taking control of their health, what are some simple steps that they can take to start that journey?
Clean eating is always going to be my foundation. That's always going to be number one. Getting the toxins out of your foods. That's absolutely number one. I am really big on being fiber focused, so that you're getting good nutrient dense foods. I teach people to intermittent fasting is fantastic and something our bodies really require for a good reset every night. And it doesn't have to be some of the crazy stuff you see where some people are doing one meal a day and all that stuff. It could be 12 hours a day. If you give your body that 12-hour break every day, you are going to make massive strides in your health. Drinking half your body weight in ounces of water, 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 not water with Mio drops, not Crystal Light, real water. That helps, your body flush all of what you're putting in it and, you know, and aid your kidneys and your liver to do the job that it was designed to do. You know, just definitely the exercise, you know, wherever you're at, you're going to have seasons in your life, especially in this world where we do so much sitting because of the jobs we do. You know, I always tell people every month, do a self-assessment and say, how much did I move this last month? Wow. If it was that little, we better get rolling, you know, and just always strive for more. You know, I'm almost 50 years old and aches and pains are nothing new to me. I was in a bad car wreck when I was 19 and told I'd never walk again. And I rebounded from all of that, but that's left me with a lifetime of arthritis. But when I'm eating right and when I constantly move, I don't have those pains. You know, if I had been a different person, I'd probably be wheelchair bound. And it's just things you have to do for yourself.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so you've talked a little bit about your company, Massey Wellness, before. You guys provide holistic health. Give us a little bit more, some of the details of what you do at Massey Wellness and then how you help treat your patients.
Absolutely. So most of my clients I put through a 16-week program. I designed this coaching program to fully detox them from the standard American diet. And from all the toxins that they've been putting in their systems. And then I do a slow reintroduction process to test them on potential trigger foods, foods that are otherwise healthy. But a lot of people have a variety of problems with. I've helped women get rid of their hot flashes that they were having at menopause because we found out that it was their nightshade vegetables that they were eating that was causing them. I've helped multiple people get rid of chronic migraines. I had this one lady I worked with last year who was having 6 migraines a week for something like 20 years. And I actually met her at her work. She was working in a hotel that I was passing through in Florida and she was miserable. And I gave her my card. I was like, call me. I would love to help you. And she did about a month later. And she ended up in 16 weeks time only having 9 migraines while we were trying to figure everything out. Would have been over 100 migraines in that time. So I've helped people with chronic pain. I have women in their 70s who were practically debilitated with chronic pain that we found out that it was a dairy sensitivity of all things that were causing them to hardly be able to walk, get them off dairy, and they're out walking their neighborhood, chasing after their grandkids, you know. So I take them through this trigger food testing. And then for people who want to lose weight or gain weight in some cases, I do macro balancing so that I show them, we figure out where their bodies are responding best to the different macros, because it's not a one size fits all thing. Some people can tolerate more carbs. Some people need more protein, less protein. So I take them through all that. And then I really focus in on any barriers to their success, just really wanting to make sure they realize that this is a lifestyle. This isn't something that you're just doing this for 16 weeks and then going to heal. And then, okay, cool. Now I'm going back to my, you know, old way of eating. So I really try and help them with that. I also do individual consults. I do meal plan building. I have with my new book, I have a monthly meal prep club that I rolled out where I teach people how to cook. I give them the recipes, do all that kind of stuff, and teach them how to cook for their entire month in 4 hours. So a lot of different things that I help people with, but the majority of my clients come through my 16-week program and really transform their lives.
Yeah. So you just mentioned your new book. It's called The Ultimate Prep Guide to Simplify Clean Eating. I actually bought a copy of it for my wife the other day, and we just got it in the mail yesterday or the day before, and she's been reading through it and really likes it. Tell us about that book.
Yeah. So this book, the idea of this came to me last year. I was actually sitting in church service, and just this message just came to me that what I was doing is impactful, but that I needed to be able to get the word out to more people. I needed to have a bigger impact to help God's kingdom realize that we are really destroying the bodies that we have, that we need to be better stewards of the bodies that we have. And how do we do that? You know, so that we can be available to all the tasks that, God calls us to. And so with that, I created this strategy, or I put into words a strategy I'd already created to show people how you can save time, save money, and improve your health by cooking for a whole month in just 4 hours and prepping. I just did it with my sister. I like to do these live once a month so that I can show people. In 3 hours and 22 minutes, my sister and I fixed everything for her household in that time period, 3 hours and 22 minutes for a whole month. So, awesome. So I teach people how to do that as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Wendy Massey, this has been an excellent conversation. I've really enjoyed this. Where can people find your work?
It's simplifycleaneating.com is where you can see everything about my book, as well as MasseyWellness.com has all of my different programs listed. I'm working on right now, my web guy is working on getting some kind of a store up there where you can purchase individual meal plans and different programs that I offer that, you know, for the independent person that just wants, hey, just tell me what to eat, and they can just download those meal plans on there. So all that should be up hopefully by the end of this week. But those two websites right now are where you can find all that I do.
All right, perfect. And I'll put links to those in the show notes. Wendy, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to me at theprotestantlibertarian@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter. You can follow me at the handle @ProLibertyPod. Again, that is @ProLibertyPod. And you can also visit me at theprotestantlibertarianpodcast.com. At theprotestantlibertarianpodcast.com, you can also support the Christians for Liberty Network and the Libertarian Christian Institute. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we will see you next Tuesday.